The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Yeah, so the topic that I thought of talking about based on, you know, what's going on in the world, the news these days, in particular around the coronavirus and the community transmission that's happening in the Northern California region, you know, it's like, it's coming up in my mind, a little bit of anxiety. And, you know, I'm heading off to Spirit Rock this weekend to teach at the month-long retreat. And I thought, well, either we'll be a little isolated enclave for the month, or we'll be a hot spot. I don't know which. So it seems almost inevitable that the coronavirus will spread, and it feels like, at least in, like, the stock market is plunging, and there's anxiety there. There's, you know, people are like scrambling around looking for masks, and so I thought, okay, anxiety, worry, and fear. This seems like a topic that feels relevant. And you know, it's not just about the coronavirus. There are other things going on in our lives and in the world that also have these states of mind come up for us. So, you know, I thought I'd explore, reflect on working with them in a Dharma way. So essentially, I think of, I mean, anxiety, worry, and fear, they're different flavors of this kind of reactivity, generally about the future. And generally, these have to do with our minds thinking about something that could happen or may happen. So they all have that flavor, but they have different kinds of aspects. And it's useful, I think, to start by reflecting on some of the distinctions, in particular between some of these more obvious kinds of states of mind. First, I want to just address what we could call primal fear. You know, that's where you are in. You know, you have been hit by a car, and you know you're in a car accident, and you're hit by a car, and you know that there's a fear that comes into the mind that is essentially, I think, in some ways, it is a kind of a protective kind of mechanism that it doesn't take us out of the present moment. In fact, when I've experienced it, it's taken me right into the present moment. And so this isn't so much the kind of fear I'm talking about. That kind of fear is happens when there's an immediacy of life-threatening danger, when something is immediately happening. There's a bodily reaction. It'll either be fight, flight, or freeze. And, you know, it often does kind of take us into the present moment, so that people talk about how in a car accident, I have a Dharma friend who was in a car accident on the freeway. They were hit and their car kind of spun. And she said that, you know, she remembers every little detail of what happened. Still, she remembers every little detail because the mind just goes right into it. So I think that's partly so that our minds, it's almost like our minds kind of slow down the present moment so that it can process what's happening and perhaps respond in a way that might be helpful. For myself, one time I haven't had too many of these instances where I felt like there was something potentially life-threatening happening. But at one point I was at Spirit Rock, and it was dusk. I was walking from the dorm to the manager's office. I was a manager probably on this retreat. So I was walking from the dorm to the manager's office, so just on the paths. And I saw a crack on the sidewalk. It looked like a crack on the sidewalk. And I went to step over the crack. I wasn't going to step on it for some reason. I tend to step over cracks. And the crack coiled up and became a rattlesnake. And it was a baby rattlesnake, which is apparently even worse. But my body just responded. I mean, it was really interesting. I immediately just became very present, and I just kind of stood there and I watched what happened. I froze, I heard the rattle, and then my body slowly walked backwards. It was just that kind of I didn't think about it. I didn't think, what should I do? What are the instructions about rattlesnakes? It's just like the body and mind seemed to know what to do. And so that kind of fear is not so much, I don't think of that kind of fear as being the kind of fear that is a reactivity or something extra. It feels like just something, this is the way our systems navigate something when our lives are threatened. But that kind of process, it's interesting, I think, that process that's designed to protect us, protect our physical being, kind of gets co-opted by the processes of mind to not only protect our physical being, but to protect our identities, to... so it's the mechanism that fear operates with kind of gets co-opted into protecting all kinds of things that are not particularly about life-threatening. It's like views and ideas and beliefs about what I need. If I'm not going to get that thing that I need, then I'm afraid. It's like, but that's just an idea. It's just a belief in the mind. And yet the same process is at work somehow. The kind of sense of, I'm not going to get this thing. Oh, no, what am I going to do? And then we kind of, we spin. And what I'd say is that the feeling when fear, anxiety, worry get to be... unskillful and unhelpful is that there's a contraction in the system, and there tends to be a kind of a, to me it feels like the mind just gets kind of stuck in a loop almost. It doesn't go anywhere. It kind of just gets whirling inward. A kind of a feeling there, or a kind of a popping around. It's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? So the mind is not settled. The mind is not very present. It's agitated. And so when there's agitation in the mind around these qualities, that's when I think our practice can help us. So these three have different flavors. Anxiety, worry, and fear have different flavors. And just in my own reflection about it, my own experience, and then also I did a little bit of research on the internet about definitions for these, and they roughly lined up with what I had thought. Fear is kind of a state of mind that happens that's concerned about something specific, a threat, something that we're... something that it's not ambiguous. We know what we're afraid of. I'm not going to get that thing or that job, or I'm gonna lose this relationship, or so there's something specific that we have some fear about. So fear has this quality of having it's connected with what we think of as danger. Even though when we even reflect on it a little bit, often this kind of reactive fear isn't so much about actual danger, but it's a perceived danger of some kind. It's a danger to our sense of self, often. Not a danger to our physical being, but a danger to our view about ourselves, a danger to our view about what we want other people to think about us. So it's that kind of danger. And if we can even start to reflect on, well, what is actually, you know, so there's fear here, what is in danger? We might be able to kind of tamp down or to realize that what's in danger is somebody's opinion about me, my sense of what somebody's opinion about me might be. And so that can help us to kind of recollect or reflect, so this isn't a life-threatening danger. And yet some of these senses of danger to our identities can be very, very close to us. You know, who am I if I'm not this kind of person? Like, I was a dancer for a long time, and I don't think I felt it so much. It wasn't so much fear, but there was a period of time where I realized that I can't do this anymore. The body is just not capable of this. And so there was a sense of a loss, a deep loss, a lot of sadness and grief around losing that identity. I was very identified with being a dancer. That was what I wanted to do with my life. And so when that became clear that I can't do that, you know, that kind of loss, the sense of that being threatened, that can be felt as fear. So, you know, so our identities can be very closely held. And so, so not to dismiss these as just like, well, it's just fear about that identity, but to recognize that it is connected to an identity as opposed to an actual physical danger. So that's a little about fear. It's connected with an actual, usually something specific. Anxiety, I think, is more often connected to nonspecific. It's more of a vague, diffuse sense of apprehension, often connected with uncertainty, connected with not being sure what's going to happen. So a sense of so it's not about something specific, although, so the example that I looked at on the internet is you might feel anxiety if you're walking down a dark street at night. You know, so you know, it's kind of the vague sense of apprehension that something could happen. Your mind might create specific fears about somebody jumping out and, you know, robbing you at gunpoint, but mostly it's more of a something might happen. And that's where it feels more like anxiety, is when there's this just sense of things are not quite, I don't know what's going to happen. This, I think, is a very pervasive state in a lot of our culture right now. That there's anxiety about climate change, for instance. There's the sense of not being sure about what's going to happen with the planet and the change of the climate. So the sense of uncertainty, of vulnerability, these when we touch into vulnerability and uncertainty, our minds often don't like that. This is a It's actually, I think of anxiety as being kind of a state of mind that's close to where we're acknowledging something very true. Because vulnerability, uncertainty are truths. We don't know what's going to happen next, even like in 10 seconds from now. We don't know what's going to happen next. We think we'll be sitting here, and yep, here we are. So, you know, we have this sense that we know what's going to happen. And but when we actually hold in our mind or take in that we don't know what's going to happen, our minds actually kind of rebel against that. They don't like to take that truth in, and in that rebelling against it, sometimes anxiety is the emotion that comes up. And I think partly it comes up because we think we should either know what's going to happen or that we should be able to control what's going to happen. And so this is a and just that place of not knowing what's going to happen, that place of uncertainty. We don't like being in that place. We don't like having that sense, and so our minds get agitated about that. Get agitated about, I don't know what's going to happen, and that kind of that the vagueness of that, the diffuseness of that, is that kind of state of agitation and uncertainty about what's going to happen. This can also be about identities. I think a lot of our worries, fears, anxieties can connect to identities as well as actual, like climate change. I don't know that that's so much about the anxieties there. That doesn't feel to me so much about a particular identity I have. It's hard. It's an interesting reflection. You know, what is that related to? I mean, to some extent, maybe it's related to just the uncertainty of, you know, what is life going to be like? What is the future going to be like? Am I going to have a home? Am I going to? So there's some of that. It's related back to me, back to who I am and what I'm. You know, what I can control. And I think a lot of, when I think of that kind of thing, I think of the losing control is really where the anxiety is in terms of climate change. Anxiety in terms of an identity, again, you know, the thing about being a dancer, you know, as this, you know, as I was losing that capacity, I was trying so hard to do everything I could, you know, do all of the Pilates and do all of the therapies and, you know, just holding on to it. And, you know, probably in that there was some anxiety around what happens if I can't do this? You know, what happens if I can't be that person? So who am I? What am I going to do? How am I going to live my life? What will I replace it with? You know, so that's kind of an anxiety kind of flavor around identity that might happen. Anxiety can come with thoughts, worries. Worry to me, anxiety to me is more the physical feeling. Worry is the mental cogitation. And so anxiety and worry, I think, come together a lot. So when there's anxiety, our minds go into worry, trying to, like, lay out the map. This is what my mind did. I remember, you know, so many times it'd be like, well, what if that happens? Okay, well, then I'll do these things. And what if that happens there? And so my mind would just do this branching tree of solutions for all of the possible scenarios I could think of in this very agitated kind of way. So this is worry. This is the kind of the mind. I think of this as connected to that problem-solving part of our minds. So what I would say about all of this is that there's something connected to discernment in all of these states. So, you know, the fact of climate change, for instance, you know, that there is something going on there, and it deserves our attention. And because of this kind of response or reaction around, I don't know what's going to happen, the reactivity around I don't know what's going to happen, that agitation comes into the mind and begins to obscure or kind of overlay or overshadow the simple discernment of, this may be a problem. What should we do about this? You know, how can we engage? What kind of choices can be made? And so that begins to step into the flavor of worry. And so again, the difference, I think, between the mind that is in a reactivity around worry versus a mind that is kind of balanced with discernment around problem solving is how much agitation is in the mind. So is the mind actually calmly reflecting, that could happen, these are some options, or that could happen, these are some options. So a kind of a distinction here around worry. Earlier today, I got news that one of my teachers on the retreat might be sick and not able to come for the first part of the retreat. And my mind kind of thought, okay, maybe that'll happen. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, maybe we could do this. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to put a lot of energy into thinking about this because I don't know if it's going to happen or not. And the team's going to have to figure this out. I don't have to figure this out by myself. I'm the coordinating teacher, so I'm kind of, you know, in charge. But I just kind of thought, okay, well, yeah, that'll be interesting. I wonder what's going to happen. That's a very different response than I would have had about 10 years ago, where my mind would have gone into, well, if that teacher can't come, then I need to contact this teacher and this teacher and this teacher and find out what they could do. And my mind would have just gone into this proliferation of problem solving and been very agitated. And so this was more like, I don't really have enough information to make a decision. Today, that's what it was like. I don't have enough information to make a decision. And yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. So that felt more like it was a little bit of thinking through something, because I did come up with a little plan. It's like, this opening night talk that teacher was supposed to do. Maybe the rest of us could each do a 10-minute reflection on how we step into long retreat. Oh, that sounds okay. We can do that. So, you know, I just created some little, like, idea, and it's like, oh, that might work, but I don't know what's going to happen. So the mind seemed much more relaxed about the not knowing than it used to be. So, you know, that's where the worry kind of runs, is when we're uncomfortable with the not knowing, the worry is trying to lay out a certainty. Or lay out, you know, what are the decision points? What do I have to do? What do I have to decide? And so, you know, that kind of mind of worry can have an agitated feeling to it. I didn't used to notice that agitation. This would happen to me all the time. And I think that my mind thought it was taking care of me. You know, and the whole, like, the feeling of being in control of all of those decisions through the worry, my mind felt like it's okay. But what it didn't notice is how agitated it was while it was worrying, which is now what I'm much more aware of. So that process of worry. One thing, early in my practice, actually, I began noticing this pattern, you know, noticing that this was something that my mind did a lot of, and I began kind of checking it out. It's like, okay, wow, the mind does a lot of this. And at a certain point, I realized that I spent so much time mapping out all these possibilities, and most of the time, the vast majority of the time, none of them happened. Something else happened. And so all of that effort, all of that energy that went into that planning and figuring, it was wasted. It's like all of that energy, it's like none of those things happened. And those times that I did think of something that actually might have happened, the decision that I thought I could make in the moment, you know, when I had it in my mind thinking out, well, this is how I'll respond if this happens. Most of the time, I couldn't respond in that way because there were other things that were going on, you know, things that I couldn't have foreseen, or there was something going on in me that I couldn't make that decision. So it's like I quickly began to see, as I looked at the worry, how useless it was, because it was so much time spent and it was almost never productive. In retrospect, it was almost never productive. So one of the things that I began to kind of tell myself when the mind would want to start to worry is kind of like, that worry takes me out of the present moment. The thing that I've seen about dealing with unfamiliar situations, dealing with situations that are have uncertainty in them, if I'm present when that happens, the mind can figure something out. If I'm actually in the moment with that uncertainty in the moment when it happens, the mind chooses something, it decides something. And if I'm able to be there with some balance of mind, it tends to make a more skillful choice. And so what I began telling myself is the best way to prepare for that unknown situation is to be here now and to practice being present with what's here, because that's the skill that's going to help me then. So that's kind of a reflection that I've used around trying to help the mind let go of that tendency to go down the rabbit hole of branching decisions, branching worries. It's like, yeah, that probably not going to be able to make those decisions anyway. The thing that's going to help me most in that moment is to actually be present. And what's going to help me to be present in that moment is to practice being present in this moment. So those are a few reflections about worry. I want to say something, too, about the discernment piece. I think a lot of the fear, the anxiety is more physical almost, or felt, but it's often related to thoughts. That thoughts can happen in our mind, and the anxiety, the fear will arise on the basis of thoughts. Worry arises on the basis of thoughts often, as opposed to actually something happening in the world. And so it's useful to look at what is actually this fear, worry, or anxiety connected to. Is it connected to something actually in the world, or is it connected to ideas and thoughts and beliefs? Mostly it's connected to thoughts in our mind, a projection into the future, an idea about what might happen, an idea about what somebody thinks about us. So these often are related to constructions in our own mind, and yet they are connected to stuff that's going on in the world, because our thoughts are related to reality, to what's going on in the world. And so, you know, sometimes when we're experiencing anxiety, worry, or fear, it's almost like a warning signal that something needs to be attended to. Something needs to be so it's not just that, oh, the mind is kind of making stuff up and being afraid of it. There's a kind of a classic story about a person who paints a picture of a tiger. And he's really right up close to it and is painting this very detailed picture of this tiger, and then steps back from it and then gets afraid because it sees a tiger. That is sometimes what's happening in our mind, that our minds are creating something, and then we're afraid of what our minds have created. That's a piece of what's happening with fear, anxiety, and worry in any case, because everything that we are experiencing is mediated through our thoughts and our mind. We don't actually experience what's out there. We experience it in a kind of a reflection in our minds. And yet, it is a reflection of the world, and And there are times when that that picture that we've painted in our mind is a reflection of something in the world that needs to be taken care of. Climate change is a good example of this. You know, it's not just in our minds. I mean, we are some of what goes on in our minds is kind of maybe disasterizing or you know, that uncertainty kind of has a spinning around what possible outcomes there might be. But it is something that's happening in the world. And this is possible with a lot of our fear, our anxiety, our worry, that it is connected to something that's actually going on. And so there is a discernment, right? There's something that maybe needs taking care of. And so what I want to point that out, because when there is that discernment or there is something that needs to be taken care of, something, you know, you're seeing somebody or something being harmed, and there's this desire to act, and often, you know, sometimes I give the example of you know, you're walking down the street with a child and the child runs out into the street. You know, it's like you don't just note, oh, there's fear happening in the mind. You know, you actually want to take action and grab the child, pull them off the street. And so there is discernment, you know, that fear arises in partly in response to something needs to happen. But what we need to do or recognize is that often the discernment, so there's something about these qualities of anxiety and fear and worry that believe that if you're not caught or if you're not following the movement of that fear and anxiety and worry, then you won't be able to act on that discernment. And so the it's like the fear and the anxiety have kind of co-opted that discernment and have us believe the only way this is going to be taken care of is if I have this anxiety and fear and worry and live in that world and try to figure things out from that space. There's delusion in those qualities that are telling us, when we're caught by them, that fear is the only way I'm going to solve this problem. There's a discernment that there's a problem of some sort, and the fear is telling us that I'm the only way that this problem is going to be solved. And so this is a delusion, actually. Now there are times, like, you know, you may not be able to get to the place where the fear goes away. I mean, you may not be able to get to the place where you don't act out of fear. Like the example of the child running into the road. You don't want to just say, oh, there's fear happening, so I don't want to act on that fear. It's like, no, you act because the child needs to be taken care of. And yet it's useful to see or to begin to recognize. So this is where mindfulness comes in. This is where our practice can begin to help us, is as we kind of can hold or notice these qualities of mind, the fear and the anxiety and the worry, our minds can begin to, through the being with them, can begin to tease apart the discernment from the extra. Just over time, our minds can begin to tease these apart. And the discernment, when the fear, the anxiety, the worry fall away, and there is this discernment of, oh, this is a problem. It's not that with the fear and the anxiety and the worry falling away that the mind just goes, oh, that's a problem. Okay, it's a problem. There's also this motivation that arises to act out of compassion for the world, for for harm, for suffering. You know, that there's this movement to act out of wisdom, out of kindness, out of generosity, out of love. And so the view of fear and anxiety and worry that I'm the only way that you're going to get this problem solved, that's actually not true, because as those begin to weaken, the power of compassion becomes much stronger for us. And it's a powerful motivator as well. Compassion acts in the world. Wisdom acts in the world. So this idea, that's just something I think that's useful to know about those states of mind. They tend to have this delusive quality that fools us into thinking, I have to hold on to you, fear, because if I don't hold on to you, then this isn't going to get solved. And so it's useful to at least know that that's not actually true. Fear does not have a lock on the solutions. Actually, I think the fear, the anxiety, creates enough agitation in the mind that it actually gets in the way of possible solutions, of the mind having more expansiveness and space to look at what possible solutions might be. And so this exploration around being aware of these states can kind of help us begin to kind of tease apart the beliefs found in fear and anxiety and worry, and the discernment of, oh, this is a problem. And the fear, the anxiety, the worry also tend to think that if there's a problem, that this is the only response, you know? Fear has to happen when this discernment happens. And again, that is a delusion. It's a kind of a mistaken belief that our minds have been conditioned to. Partly because, you know, fear, anxiety, worry are you know, very, well, we've been conditioned in our cultures through them, but also just in our system. Our human system also responds to situations using these qualities. And it has gotten things done. And so we've kind of gone along with that view that those states of mind have, that, oh, this is how things get done. And not kind of stepping back and saying, well, what might be another way? So let's see. So I think I'll talk a little bit about being mindful of these states, because I mostly talked about kind of the what we can how we might be able to hold them in a different way. Learn something about these qualities of mind from a different perspective than our usual perspective. But the practice can help us with these states by helping us to hold them in a different way. Usually what happens when they arise is that we're acting out of them. They have such a strong power to them. The delusion is so strong in them that I'm the way that things will happen. You need to follow me. That we just follow them. And so the movement of being aware of them is a different relationship to them, being mindful of these states. Now, it may be in daily life we have to kind of be mindful or aware that they're happening and act anyway. You know, there are definitely times where we have to do that. But there are also times in our practice where we see, you know, we're sitting quietly in meditation, and some thought comes into our mind. And that thought arises, and it produces a kind of an image or a scenario about which we think, oh no, that situation, oh, I forgot about that, oh, what am I going to do? And fear arises in the mind. And we know, we can tell ourselves in that moment, yeah, this is not something I need to get up and leave the room and take care of now. We know that well enough. And so there are times in our practice where we can actually say to ourselves, okay, this is an opportunity to actually see if I can play with being aware of this state instead of following through on it, either through the worry and the mind. That's, I think, often what happens in meditation when these things come up, is that our minds just go launch into the worry and doing the planning and the, you know, the multiple branches of figuring out how am I going to solve this. But if you can catch it, if you can see, oh, this is fear, this is worry happening, then you might be able to explore it in a different way. Now, it's important, I think, not to have an attitude or a relationship to these of kind of repression or these shouldn't be happening, because they're very deeply conditioned. They're states of mind that they're deeply conditioned not only through our biology but also through our culture, through our families, through our lived life. We have conditioned these states, and so of course they're going to arise. The habit that we've had in our minds of responding to situations in which there's a perceived threat for our identity, or what we think people think about us, or what we think we need to do, or that is how we have tended to respond in the past. And as the Buddha has said, what we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. So these states become very habitual. And so to think that we can just kind of put them aside, I mean to say, oh, I'm meditating now, so I don't need to think that thought. That's one form of meditation where we might say, okay, set the thoughts aside and come back to the breath. But another form of practice is really to open to what's here. And so what's arising now is this thought that has created this feeling of fear. And can I be aware of that? This is a whole different relationship to fear, anxiety, or worry than just following it. There's a vast difference between knowing that you're experiencing fear and acting out of fear through thoughts or taking physical action, the mind kind of running off into its worry loop is taking action on the fear effectively. But the knowing, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being experiencing fear, that is possible for us. And one of the best ways to explore that at first is to, you know, not to dismiss the thoughts, but to kind of open to how have the thoughts landed in our system? What does it feel like to have had those thoughts there? So if you're coming into the body, feeling the physicality of what the experience of this state is. Anxiety often has a very diffuse kind of feeling. It's kind of hard to pin down, maybe. Feels more just it's hard even to describe. You know, it's kind of got a broad kind of feeling. Fear can have some more specific experiences in my mind, in my experience, like contraction in the throat, contraction in the stomach. The heart kind of gets, there's more of a gripping sensation. Anxiety feels more like this nebulous kind of agitation to me. It's got a much more diffuse, agitated quality to it. And so can you be with that? Can you know, oh, this is what it's like to feel fear. This is what it's like to feel anxiety. So this helps us, first of all, to kind of, because the thoughts are a real driver for fear and anxiety, when we can step aside from the thoughts and not to repress them, but to just say, well, how is this manifesting in the body right now? If you're stepping aside from the thoughts, then you're no longer kind of buying into the thoughts in a way. And I sometimes think of the thoughts as being like the the foot on the gas pedal of those emotions. You know, when you're thinking those thoughts and involved in those thoughts, you've got your foot on the gas pedal and you are just going with that emotion. But if you take your foot off the gas pedal, you know, when you take your foot off the gas pedal and put the car into neutral, the car doesn't stop. And that's kind of like if you kind of take your attention out of the thoughts, the emotion doesn't stop, but putting your system in neutral, kind of to just be with that experience, maybe you can hold that experience. Maybe you can hold the experience of the fear, of the anxiety for a little while and watch what happens. You might learn something about the triggers for the fear. You might learn something about actually, wow, this is way out of proportion to what the situation actually is. So there's a lot that you can explore just through that kind of turning to the body. And when there's a little bit of a distance from the thoughts and the fear maybe can settle a little bit, then there may be able to be a little bit of that teasing apart of what is actually happening. You know, what's the discernment? So part of this process of being aware of the experience of the fear may help you to recognize, okay, well, what's actually happening here is I've got this situation where I may or may not get this job. Okay, that's the situation. And all of this stuff about the mind creating all these scenarios, this is extra. So what do I need to do about this? Is there anything that I actually can do right now? That's something that I've seen a lot of, actually, when I start to really look at things. It's like, actually, there's something that I don't know is going to happen. So this comes back to that uncertainty. But there's nothing that I can do right now. I just have to live into this and see how it unfolds. That's uncomfortable. And so this is the last piece that I'll say and then take a couple of minutes for some questions. That part of the exploration around working with fear, anxiety, worry is as we begin to tease apart the extra from what's the actual situation, we often come to the place where we see the actual situation involves some unknown, involves an uncertainty, and a lot of the fear is springboarding off that uncertainty because we don't like uncertainty. We feel like it's a problem. We feel like I shouldn't have that uncertainty in my life. So we have some reactivity against the uncertainty. But that uncertainty is actually a manifestation, a reflection of truth. Because it's true that things are uncertain. That is the way things are. And so kind of learning to be a little more comfortable with that truth, that has really helped me to navigate fear and anxiety in such a different way. Because so much of the fear and the anxiety springs off of the discomfort with the unknown. And so the more that we can begin to see, oh, well, what's actually happening here is there's a discernment that there's something that's not clear. And that's the truth. Can I hold that? Can I hold that sense of uncertainty? And see where the mind kind of wants to go. No, that's not okay. You know, where's the springing off there? You know, where's the reactivity to that? Because so much of that, these states come out of that place. So that's plenty for me. I had more in my notes, but any comments or thoughts or reflections or... Yeah. Is the mic on? I think it is. I thought. No, oh, okay.
There. Now the green light is on. So skillful means, it seems, is the key to a lot of this, is that knowing, well, this is just proliferation of thought, or this is actually something productive.
Yes.
And I think that
there's a different feeling between those two.
And an example that I have is that we don't know when there's going to be an earthquake. We know that there will be one, but we don't know when. And it's worthwhile to know where your shoes are, because very likely there'll be broken glass on the ground. But there are just a number of sensible thoughts.
Yes.
And then after that, you know, one just knows that you do have a certain skill set, and you probably will do well with it.
I think the key with that skillful means is knowing the difference between the proliferation and the kind of the, I don't remember the word you use, but the more kind of logical or more productive, the productive kind of thoughts. You know, like I was up in Oregon where, you know, the Cascadia subduction zone is, you know, the sometime within the next 30 years, I think there's a 10% chance in the next 10 years of a 9.0 earthquake happening up there. And so I did know where my shoes were, and I had a bag packed, you know, that I could pick up and leave the house with if I needed to get to the tsunami evacuation place, you know. I had that set up, and I wasn't particularly alarmed about it, but every night I put my shoes right under my bed. You know, so it's this kind of, and it wasn't an agitated thing. And so that's the piece, I think, to recognize, is if the mind is agitated, that's worth kind of, okay, there's extra here. If the mind is thinking about it, oh yeah, I need to pack a bag and just get that ready so that I can leave at any time. That didn't have that agitated quality to it. So I think that's really important, to know the difference between those two. Thanks. Anything from this side of the room? Yeah.
One of the reasons I have been exploring meditation is because I became aware of how much of the time I was reactive. And I'm trying to step back and become aware. And there was an instance that, so I've been sitting a lot recently, and for the past 2 months I've really been doing this with some intention. And there was an instance at work recently where I just had this kind of gnarl in my stomach going into an uncomfortable meeting. And it wasn't awful, but it wasn't ideal. And later in hindsight, I saw that the gnarl might have been my awareness in my body that there was something of danger here. And the danger is my own reactivity.
It wasn't. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's.
So I'm. Yeah. My relationship to that uncomfortable feeling is changed with regard to my practice and using the mindfulness sitting to get a little closer so that perhaps I could become more aware, close the time gap.
Yes, yeah.
So I can be more skillful.
That's beautiful. That's exactly how it works, too, is that we start to see something, and then the more familiar we get, if we don't resist it, I mean, like, you're seeing what's happening already, right? You're seeing what has been happening. There's no need to judge yourself for it. It's like, it's being exposed, and it's better to see it than not see it. And the more we see it, the more we do get closer to it, and the more we begin to see, oh, this is actually how this begins to come into being. It's like, it's, you know, often we see it kind of after it's, if it's been a while, it gets kind of to the level of like this gnarl in your stomach. It's been a while that it's been going. For me, it was anger, and you know, it was like, you know, I was in this rage, and yet the seeing of the anger, just beginning to see it over and over again, began to kind of back into seeing it earlier and earlier in the process. And so if you're able to just be curious about that, oh, there it is again. Oh, look at that. And not have any idea of, oh, I want it to go away or judging it, but just like, oh, there it is. It's like then the mind begins to get attuned to that, and it's like it understands its suffering because it's painful, and it also begins to kind of back up so that it notices it a little sooner. And a little sooner. And then at some point you may begin to get a sense of, oh, here's when it starts. Oh, I had an image of us all sitting in that meeting and somebody yelling at me or whatever. You know, it's like that the mind kind of had produced something that it was the beginning feeling of that. And then you can see, well, you know, that might happen, but you know but anyway, so I think you're describing exactly the way the process works, and if you can really just have a curiosity about it all, I that's what I mostly want to encourage, is curiosity. It's so powerful, this practice. It's so powerful. And also I think, too, another piece that I think that we need to look at is, you know, what when there's fear or anxiety or worry, you know, the space that we can have in our meditation and our observing of them can help us to kind of get a little bit of a sense of whether the mind has blown this out of proportion, because so much of the time it does blow it out of proportion, and that it's, you know, oh, it's like actually it can be, you know, 10 notches lower than the mind has created it. And so that's another benefit of seeing these things. And it's time to stop. So. Thank you.